On now to the World Cup, where Morocco and France are set to meet tomorrow. One of those teams will head to the finals. But the political context of this match is impossible to ignore. France controlled Morocco for over 40 years, and the country finally won independence in 1956. Morocco has already beat Belgium, Spain, and Portugal, three other European heavyweights who were also colonial powers. For some, the Moroccan team has now become an anti-colonial standard bearer. Ishan Tharoor has been writing about this for the Washington Post. Ishan, hello.
Hi there.
So Morocco's at the intersection of a lot of identities, representing both Arabs and Muslims. The team is also the first from the African continent to make it this far in the tournament. How's the team navigating all these dynamics?
You know, it's a really, truly fascinating story. I just got back from Doha. I spent the sort of half, the middle part of the World Cup in Qatar. And the way in which the country, the broader Arab world, I would say a broad section of soccer-supporting fans around the world, of soccer-following fans around the world, have embraced Morocco. They have become this kind of vehicle for lots of people's desires and passions, some of which is entirely quite political. You know, Morocco, as you said, is the first African team to make the semifinals of a World Cup, the first Muslim majority nation to be there, and they have been hailed as this kind of locus of all sorts of identities at the same time.
You know, I find it fascinating because their coach is very pan-Africanist. There's a lot of African pride. They're also very pan-Arab. We've seen kind of the jubilation of holding the Palestinian flag. So just kind of talk about these things that, you know, in the mainstream here, we might not see or talk about a lot besides now having it kind of brought to us in the World Cup.
Yes, they've really made themselves the standard bearers of a certain kind of identity and maybe even politics in the region. You've seen throughout the tournament the ubiquity of Palestinian flags flown by not just Palestinian fans visiting the stadiums, but every Arab nation that's present there. And that's really a gesture, to a certain extent, a kind of rejection of what some Arab governments, including Morocco, have been doing in terms of normalizing relations with Israel. What's also really fascinating about the Moroccan team is that the bulk of the team is born outside of Morocco, specifically in Europe. So it's very much also a team of the European diaspora. Some of these players on the Morocco team that are lining up against France could have theoretically played for France. Some of them could have played for the Netherlands, for Belgium, and so on. And so they really represent this kind of new kind of 21st century identity of people who are, in many cases, born and raised in Europe, but have adopted the nation of their parents, and built a kind of regional and broad-based identity around it.
And then also the sweetness of so many of the players embracing their mothers on the field afterwards. But I want to ask you, Morocco has beaten kind of former colonial powers Spain and Portugal, but Morocco has claimed and occupied Western Sahara. That's a decades-old dispute. Do you think fans and analysts acknowledge this tension?
Yes, I mean, this is something you've seen comment on in social media, that while many are very giddy right now during the World Cup about the sort of post-colonial dimension of Morocco beating Spain and now facing off against France, that we have to remember that this is a country that is also, to a certain extent, engaging in its own colonial operation and exercise its occupation of the disputed Western Sahara. And of course, this is there are no easy narratives in the world, and certainly that's also true for the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are all these important conversations about centuries of oppression and colonialism happening. I'm just wondering, you've just come back. Should we let the World Cup just be about the game and take up these issues elsewhere?
This is a tricky question because, of course, the FIFA, the global soccer organizing body, has been desperate to insist that the World Cup should be kept at a remove from politics. But the World Cup is such a massive event, such a singular attraction for so many people, that it comes to hold lots of meaning. And that meaning is invariably political. And, of course, when we think about this tournament in Qatar, in this very unique context where we've seen hundreds of thousands of migrant workers enlisted in grand construction projects, in contexts where we have reports of documented abuses and mistreatment and deaths. It's hard to separate the dark side of all that from the glee and joy that we're seeing on the soccer field.
You know, we only have about 30 seconds, but you've seen the Atlas Lions play in person. What are you going to look for as they take the pitch against France tomorrow?
Oh, they have such a spirit. There's no team I've seen, and I saw quite a few games while I was in Qatar, which is one of the joys of being there, that is as determined, as organized, as united in fighting spirit as they are. They are not as talented as the French, but they are still quite talented, and they will defend, and look for opportunities to break. And really, the fight that they have is unique, and they will be roared on by a huge support in the stadium. So that's something to watch as you look on.
And we'll know at least one side of the World Cup final today once the Argentina-Croatia match wraps up. Ishan Tharoor from The Washington Post, thank you.